Thank you, Ben. My name's Lee. I'm an alcoholic. Don't believe half that stuff. This would be a hell of an act to follow, but. And I always said that being an alcoholic wasn't what I set out to be in life. We grew up in San Gabriel, Vince and I, and when I was sitting down on the curb when I was a little kid, and talking to my little buddies, and we were trying to decide whether we were going to grow up and be cowboys or firemen or cops. I don't recall telling any of those little jerks, I think I'll grow up and be an alcoholic. The events of my life indicated that's by God what I turned out to be, but that wasn't where I set out to go, you know. The other thing I do is like to welcome the newcomers in the room. God, and I hated that term when I was a newcomer. Sure, there's probably nothing else polite to call you, but, you know, I know for a fact that your presence here is important to me, and it's my belief your presence here will become important to you. And I did not feel that way when I walked into the first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. By strange quirk of fate and everything else, I went to my very first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous exactly 22 years ago. Today is my 22nd birthday. I don't tell you that to impress you, although I got to admit it just impresses the hell out of me. But, you know, it's also living proof that, you know, you can be as far from politically correct as you can possibly get and stay sober, if that gives any of you hope. Like I said, I'm a garden variety drunk. I worked pretty much construction my whole life. I was a cable splicer, which is, being a cable splicer is one of them kind of jobs. You can be the greatest cable splicer on earth and not be worth a damn at anything else, because it doesn't equate to anything else. But I was a good one, for whatever that's worth. And I worked through probably the last great era of blue-collar prosperity, so I got to make a lot of money, and I could afford to drink a lot, and it was wonderful. So I probably had my first drink where I drank alcoholically at about age 15, and that's when I found that magic Vince was talking about, that, ooh, this is the stuff. I never fit in any place. I didn't fit in Boy Scouts, United States Navy, Pacific Telephone, my family, anywhere else I happened to be. I just was the odd man out. When I found the magic juice, by golly, it did the trick. I could fit in any old place. It was fine. Where I got a real good run on it was during the Vietnam War, because they sent me off to this war that I wanted no damn part of. I was scared to death. I was 19 years old, away from home for the first time. It was a horrible experience. And I found that when I drank, I felt pretty cool. If you put enough booze in me, by God, I'm John Wayne. I'm not afraid of anything. So I realized that that would be a handy-dandy way to get myself through the war, because I wasn't enjoying that a whole heck of a lot. So I got hammered, and I missed most of the war, to be quite honest with you. Problem is I didn't get unhammered until December 12, 1981. I got out of the service on October 17, 1968. I missed a lot of other life in there in the interim, you know. Once you drink, you know, you drink and you get that kind of attitude like we get. I ask you, why do you do that? I do that because I don't give a damn. What do you do that for? I don't give a damn. I'm telling you, if you don't give a damn often enough, long enough, you miss out on a whole hell of a lot of life, because it goes right by you. But I drank as much as I could, as long as I could, and to this day, I always drank while I was capable of drinking. If I could drink, I drank. I never drank socially from get-go. That's the only part in the book that I don't really prescribe to. It says it's a great obsession of every abnormal drinker to drink like the normal man. Hooey. I never wanted to drink like the normal man. I liked the effect. I was fortunate enough to stay employed while I stayed drunk, so I could buy the kind of stuff I like the flavor of. But I like to get right to the point where the only thing that works is heartbeat and breathing. I don't want to hear anything, I don't want to see anything, I don't want any input, I just want to be hammered. That's what I did. And, you know, I ran into a few of these little side trips that we get into. I could regale you with a drunk log about going to jail and this and that and everything. Well, I'll get through that kind of stuff, you know. I'd like to talk to you about keen alcoholic thinking. That's something we talked a lot about when I first got sober. Let me go back a little bit. Okay. I did what I was doing as long as I could stand it, and everything was just rosy, and I did those strange things, you know, things I didn't notice, like have my children afraid of me, my wife upset with me, feeling bad inside, because I stayed hammered long enough I didn't feel those kind of things. And I was, you know, going along drinking, and everything was peachy keen, and my brother got sober. Well, I'm telling you, if you got a mom that's got two drunken sons, and one of your brothers gets sober, it makes things real tough on you. It's like having a sibling that does real cool in school and you don't. Why don't you do what Gus is doing? I'm doing what Gus is doing. Not that, you idiot. Anyhow, my brother got sober. Thank God he had the decency to move to Medford, Oregon before he got sober so they couldn't compare us side by each. But it was ugly. But, you know, that didn't stop me. So I'm just going along doing what I was doing. My brother called me up one night, and it was probably after 8 o'clock, and that's probably pretty incoherent. So he figured I had it. So one day I came home from work, and I found this mailing envelope to me, addressed from my little brother, Gus, Lee Erickson. Kitchen. Gus don't write much. This is kind of cool. Letter from Gus. Let's have a look at this. So I ripped this thing open and I dumped it out on the dining room table. My family's all standing around watching me. My kids were little at the time. The first thing that hit the table was a big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. My brother used to buy them things in tag sales and stuff and send them away to people he figured needed them. I guess he figured I needed one, so he sent me one. I got this raggedy old AA book. It's damn near faded white on the outside, but you can still see where it's embossed across the front, Alcoholics Anonymous. I got an AA book, looks old, looks like I've been sober for 100 years, and it's cool. So a bunch of this literature you guys got come filtering out like raindrops, you know? Then this table, cassette tape bounced across the table a few times. My family all looked at this stuff, and they looked at me, and I looked at them, and we looked at this, and they looked at me, and I scooted that stuff back in the envelope, and I took it out to the garage where I did my drinking. So I read all that stuff. You can read all that stuff they gave you drunk. It doesn't do you a hell of a lot of good, but you can do it. I listened to that tape, and it was kind of cool, you know. Had a lot of guys, mixed a lot of humor in his pitch, and pretty neat. It was an old boy from the Panhandle area, Texas, named Wino Joe Lee. And he had a lot of humor in his tape, but all he talked about was feelings. And he had said a line in there that I understood drunk, I understand sober. It chills me to my toenails every time I think of it, but he says you can't call an alcoholic anything he hasn't already cried into his pillow the night before. And I knew exactly what he meant by that. That didn't stop me either, so I continued drinking. So I drank, and we bought this little house down yonder, and how the hell can you be an alcoholic, man? I got a job, I got all these motorcycles, I got a couple of cars, I got a house in town, I got this crazy old lady, two ungrateful kids. Jesus, man, I got it all going. You know? So we bought this house in town, right next to this old fart that became my mentor. Robert Evans was his name, neatest old man on earth. Me and old Bob used to hang together because I was working evenings at the time. We had an estimate going down the middle of Whittier Boulevard, which is a state highway in East Los Angeles, and they get excitable if you close them things during the daytime. So we'd work out there at night, and I'd hang out with this old coot during the daytime. We'd hang together and do things, do this, that, and the other thing. And he said something to me about 25, 30 years ago that I didn't understand at all. He looked at me and he says, you know, Lee, he says, alcohol makes a damn fine servant, but a piss poor master. What's this old buzzard talking about? So I kept doing what I was doing for a while longer. Met his son, which was either my salvation or downfall, depending upon how you want to look at it, because his son was a chip off my old block, by God. We drank together for a while, he and I. But I kind of noticed this guy was, he's an alcoholic. By God, you know, he'd come over to your house, you'd follow him around like a puppy when he was in your house, make sure nothing walked out with him. And he was, you know, big, hearty, hearty, good-looking, glad-to-see-you type of salesman type dude. And after going drinking with him a couple nights, I realized that due to this guy's sparkling personality, he had somebody in every bar in the San Gabriel Valley that wanted to kill him. And if you went drinking with this knothead, you ended up in a fight. So he'd come over and he'd say, let's go have us a drink, Lee. And I said, no, let's go get us a 12-pack or something and drink here. He'd say, okay, cool, because I was always buying, because he was unemployed quite a bit. So we'd go get some juice, and we'd go out in the backyard, and we'd drink whatever it was we were drinking, and we'd jump up and down on this trampoline that my kids had. Another, you know, pure example of God watching out for drunks and fools, because neither one of us killed ourselves on that thing. We did our thing, we did this and that, and then he gets quit showing up quite as often. That's kind of interesting. Well, I come to realize later was that Mom and Pops got a little sick of him. They said, we love you. We don't like watching you doing what you're doing to you, so as long as you continue doing that, do it somewhere else. So he didn't hang around their house anymore. Every once in a while, when he's pretty sure they wouldn't see, he'd sneak over my place because he always knew I had this old jug of bourbon up in the cupboard when he was broke and he needed to drink. When he wasn't broke, he bitched a lot about the cheap bourbon I drank. When he was broke, he never complained about it a bit, and he came over and drank it for me. But, you know, stop by, have a few drinks, we take a few bounces on the trampoline, he'd slip. He knew damn well I wasn't going bar hopping with him. At any rate, you know, he disappeared for a while. I continued doing what I was doing. One day he drove right into his parents' driveway. It's like he owned the joint. Look at that. And he comes bounding out of his truck. And I could tell something was amiss. You know. Yeah, you have the premonition that things just ain't going the way you think they ought to. And you know exactly what it is in a very short period of time. Well, I have one of them about him. Well, by this time in the game, I had graduated to making bourbon in sevens and then big iced tea glasses with big plastic babies. Because you can put a whole half pint of bourbon in one of them things and a can of 7-Up and one ice cube. Fills that mother right to the brim. You hang your upper lip over that thing and you suck off about that much of it and you put a few more ice cubes in it and that cools it down to about 2 inches. You take a mighty swig out of that and you put the rest of the ice cubes in and you trot out front in the front line with the rest of the guys. You know, you're cool. Well, I was drinking one of them giant stumblers out of my front lawn when this guy pulled up. He popped out of his truck, came across the lawn to see me, and I got all this information in a real short period of time, and I knew I wasn't going to enjoy any of it. Uh-huh. Man looked happy. I mean, he was a party, hearty, shake-your-hand, marvelous human being type of dude, but I'd never seen him happy in my life, genuinely happy inside. He had a light in his eye, and he had a sparkle to him, and the tipper was this Diet Coke he had in his hand. So, something's wrong there. So he came over, and I knew damn well what he was up to, and I decided I wasn't going to ask him, because I didn't want to hear. So we have one of them front lawn conversations like you have, you know. Hi, how are you? What's going on? Are you getting any lately? I heard this voice that sounded exactly like me ask, and what have you been doing? And as soon as I voiced that question, I realized I made this horrendous mistake. God, he lit up with the fervor of a newly sober alcoholic, and this guy was stoked. And he was wound up tighter than a bull tied in at fly time, man. He was happy. He says, I've been going to AA. And, oh, shit. And man, I had mixed feelings about this guy. If ever there was anybody on God's green earth that needed Alcoholics Anonymous, he was the guy. But I felt the same way about him that I felt about friends I had get killed during the war, you know. This guy's life was over him. He's never going to dance, sing, or make love again. Life's just come to a screeching damn halt. I mean, it's nice he found AA, because by God, he needs it. But phew, his life just came to a halt. So we talked a while, he and I. And then he gave me the AA curse. Now I'm trying to get this son of a bitch off my front lawn, because I'm really uncomfortable being around him. I want him out of there. And I'm sure he was probably pretty sick of talking to me by that stage in the game, because I was pretty toasted. So I'm working him towards the truck. And he gets in the truck and he sticks his head out the window and whips the AA curse on me. You guys might have had it at one time or the other. He looked me right in the eye and he says, Lee, if things ever get bad enough, you give me a call. Yeah, right, you bet. Yeah, fine, get out of here. And I got rid of him. I proceeded to do what I've been doing for a couple of years. Well, what I've been doing is what we all do. You know, I was saying earlier, we talk about keen alcoholic thinking, you know. When I got here, they told me that my best thinking got me to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was so proud. I thought they recognized the fact that I was such a bright old drunk that, by God, I got myself to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what they meant? They meant that my best thinking on any given subject, good, bad, or indifferent, caused me to drink. And nothing will get you to Alcoholics Anonymous quite like drinking, let me tell you. But, you know, I was doing that stuff. I was doing keen alcoholic thinking. Prior to this knothead getting sober, he worked for a large concrete outfit down south that will remain anonymous. Here's an example of keen alcoholic thinking for you. As an employee of this outfit, he got the leftover concrete at the end of the day. So we poured driveways. We did mine. We did his dad's next door. We did his brother-in-law's up in Arcadia. And we'd set the forms and water them down because, man, when this mud came at the end of the day, it was hot and ready to rip. We'd come in there, we'd dump the leftover cement in there, we'd finish it up, we'd sit around and drink 4,000 or 5,000 beers and admire our work, you know. My driveway, part of my driveway is part of the concrete that they melt the City of Converse City Hall with. Parts of my driveway got rocks in it that big. But by God, the cement was free, so we used it. If I'm out there gassed to the eyebrows camping this stuff, and you'd smack some big rock here and want to come up over there, and you'd pick the one extra rock out, and you could get it, you know, finished. But that's neither here nor there. Anyhow, we're getting this free concrete. We're drinking. Everything's rosy. Got my driveway done. Got my neighbor's driveway done. Got his brother-in-law's driveway done. Got everything but the little approach section, the kind of funnel-shaped part there at the front. So we went down to this anonymous concrete joint one Saturday morning and proceeded to wait for the leftovers. But 10, 11 o'clock, things were getting a little slow, so we trotted down at the corner for some beers and drank a few of them and waited for the leftovers. Still no leftovers, so we trotted down and got some more beers and drank them. Well, all the trucks came back, and they're all empty. For some strange reason, everybody had estimated their stuff just right. No leftover concrete. You know, honestly, got a true blue alcoholic, ain't about to take no for an answer. So he went in and talked to the batch man, who I'm sure had to be one of us. He stuck me in this old 7-yard mixer, and I'd never driven one of those things before in my life. And we drove this thing underneath one of them hoppers, put 9 yards of concrete in a 7-yard mixer, and stole the concrete, the truck and all. Off we go. You know, them things are expensive. That's grand theft. Well, I wouldn't be telling you about this, but the statute of limitations is long over on that, mother. In fact, I shared about this one night in a meeting when I was sober about 20 minutes, and this guy turned purple on me because the statute of limitations wasn't over then. At any rate, we stole this damn truck. And, you know, you could say that's keen alcoholic thinking, stealing stuff. You know, high school kids steal stuff. That ain't so much alcoholic thinking. Here's where the alcoholic thinking comes in. We took this thing home, we finished this driveway, we took turns on our wives drive this thing around the block. Where the keen alcoholic thinking comes in is we return that thing to where we stole it from. You can get as much trouble returning them things as you can stealing them. If I'd had any sense, I'd have parked that mother up on the freeway someplace, walked all the fingerprints off it and left. But no, you know, I just did things like that repeatedly, things that defy description, stupid stuff. And even at that was, pretty much the best part of it. You know, if you're any kind of an alcoholic, you got anything at all going for you, the very best part of this disease is the nifty stuff. Stealing cement trucks. Getting in a fight with the old lady. Getting in jail. Getting in a fight with anybody, you know. You get all tanked up, you go down to the bar, you find some gorilla about twice my size, and you tell him exactly what you think of his mother, and the fight's on, you know. That's the best part. You can go back, you know, you can go pick some guy, little guy. Have him knock the hell out of you. You go back to work the next day and tell your buddies, I must have been a dozen of those bastards. God, it was terrible, you know? That woman's always on my case, man. I work hard all day. I do this, I do that. She likes bitching me. I just need a little pleasure at night. And cops are waiting for me, man. As soon as I drive out of that bar at 2:15 in the morning, they're waiting for me right now. That's the best part of drinking. Think about it. The setting's the stuff that gets you to Alcoholics Anonymous. You can get in fights, get arrested, go to jail your whole damn life, and never go to Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a little cheesy shit to get you to Alcoholics Anonymous. I always made enough money to make a good living. I can tell you about the fights I got in. I can tell you about the old lady being pissed off at me. I can tell you about this. I can tell you about that. I couldn't tell you about stealing money out of my kids' piggy banks to buy a bottle with. I couldn't tell you about coming home at night and having my children afraid of me. They're coming home and finding my wife rocking in a rocking chair out on the back porch at night, praying that I'd die that night and get out of everybody's hair. Because those are the kind of things that get you to Alcoholics Anonymous. Those little sneaky, nasty things you ain't ever going to tell anybody about. You know, we all got them. Because this is a feeling disease, you know. It's an action program. You got to do something to get sober, but what gets you here is your feelings. Things that are going on between your ears, you know. But, you know, I did that as long as I could stand it. And about 2 years after this knobhead showed up on my front porch, the bottom dropped clean out of my life. Son of a bitch. So what do? I called him. We had the same conversation we had on my front lawn. Oh, 2.5 years earlier. Hi, how are you? What's going on? You getting any lately? So I heard this voice that sounded exactly like me say, what do you want? This guy, he wasn't too happy talking to me 2.5 years earlier when I was just drunk. he wasn't really overjoyed with me 2.5 years later when I was just completely wasted. So I asked him, are you still going to them silly meetings? And he says, yeah. Then I heard this voice that asked, that sounds just like me, say, would you take me with you? Boy, this guy's demeanor changed right now. He popped right into what I've come to know as tough love. He says, fine, dammit, there's a meeting tonight at 8 o'clock. Be at my house by 7:15 or we'll leave without you. Goodbye. And he hung up on me. Who in the hell are you talking to? Be at your house. I said, shit. I was over at this guy's house about 6 o'clock that night. Deathly afraid to be there, deathly afraid not to be there, just wound up tighter in a bull's ass at fly time. I didn't know whether to poop or wind my watch, man, but I had no other place to go. There I sat. This son of a gun had the audacity to sit there and finish dinner with his wife and his two little girls. I'm sitting on his sofa, one cheek on, one cheek off, just phenomenally uncomfortable. I know damn well his wife's going to figure out why I'm there pretty soon. By God, that's going to be embarrassing as hell. And I could hardly wait. He slowly finished his dinner, pat his kids on the head and his wife on the popo, and off we went to Alcoholics Anonymous. And he trapped me in this old lowrider he had, and we headed for Covina, California, the sobriety capital of the world. And off we went. And this guy gave me his best AA pitch. I learned something new that night, too. I learned that he's even a bigger sleazeball than I thought he was to begin with. But he told me a little bit of his story and this and he told me all kinds of interesting things, the majority of which didn't make a heck of a lot of sense at that stage in the game, but he told me anyhow. When we got down to the Monday night meeting in Covina, California, big old place, 200-300 people milling around, scariest place I've ever been in my life. These people are smiling, they got a light in their eyes, and they're clean, they smell pretty good, and men are hugging women, and women are hugging men, and men are hugging men, and women are hugging women. We have a spooky looking spot, brother. And this guy blew my anonymity right out the window the first night. He says, this is Lee, he's one of us. He says, shake hands with him, dummy. And I put my hands up and shake hands with you. God, I shook hands like a politician that night. Finally, they ushered us into the meeting room, and I'm heading back to the cheap seats, right, guys? That's where I'm going to hang out. He ushered me right up to the front row, where I couldn't get away. They started the meeting, and they read all this stuff they read tonight. And they read the part about seeing the hands of the newcomers. I don't know if any of you sat out there and didn't put your hand up tonight, but by God, that's what I was planning to do. This son of a bitch stuck his elbow in my ribs and I put my hand up. By the time you got to my end of the room, I knew what you wanted to hear, and being the people pleaser that I am, I said, my name's Lee, I'm an alcoholic. That's the first time in my life I ever used that word in my name in the same sentence. Being an alcoholic has got some ugly connotations. See, I drank in my garage by myself because nobody in their right mind would get near me when I drank. And we used to have these tailgate meetings in the morning. That meant they'd leave the animals out in the parking lot because they didn't want you in the garage with the big bosses. And the bosses bring the truck keys out and stuff and tell you what you're going to do, you know. You know, middle of January, been raining for 3 weeks. My face looks like it's going to explode because it's bright red. My workmates would say, where the hell were you yesterday? There's no sun where I was. You know. There I get down there and somebody get downwind of me and they take a whiff. So, phew. You fall into a barrel of it? Now, what'd you tell people? How did you describe your drinking to party? Friendly little words, you know? I didn't tell people. I drank in the garage by myself because nobody on God's green earth will get near me when I drink. When's the last time you told a workmate I got drunk last night and crapped my pants? That ain't something we brag about. You know? Those are the little things that get you here. My brother's been sober about 8 months longer than me. He says you don't work hard till the sweat runs down the crack of your butt and you haven't been drunk till you filled your pants. And he says, I've been drunk. You know, those are the type of things that get you. It's funny now. It wasn't funny when I was doing it. You know. Well, you know, I'm out there in the garage drinking. Family didn't have enough sense to stay away from me. Pretty soon the dog started to stay away. The only thing we had was this old cat that was just nastier than hell. She's the only thing getting near me. Was brave. Anyway, there I was. That's what I was doing. So off we go to Alcoholics Anonymous. He introduces me to all you lovely people. Man, you people told me the strangest things. It's kind of neat, though, because not many people were telling me that at that particular point in my life. You're saying things like, we're glad you're here. That's cool, huh? They weren't telling me that anyplace else. Keep coming back. One I liked was, if you want what I got. said I wasn't sure I wanted what you got. I just knew I didn't want any more of what I had. You want what I got? Overweight, gray-haired old man is crazier than a loon. I'm a hell of a lot better than I used to be, which gives you a rough idea what I was like. Well, you know, there I was, trapped in Alcoholics Anonymous. And every night, they asked, hands of newcomers. That's about the third night, my ribs got sore. I quit waiting for them to poke me in the ribs. And I wasn't so sure I wanted to be there. And I didn't know that I could drink. After I told them I had, you know, 30, you know, 1 day, 5 days, 10 days, whatever. And I was afraid that if I went 31 days and I put my hand up as a newcomer, somebody grabbed me and tossed my ass out in the parking lot. And I didn't want to be in here with you, but I damn sure didn't want to be out there. So I was caught between a shit and a strain someplace. I didn't know what the hell to do. So I sat there and I didn't drink for 30 days and I put my hand up. Lord, what a thrill that was. After the first week of this, and it started on Monday night. We went Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Sunday night, I says, I'll meet you over your house at 7:15 tomorrow. He says, no. He says, you know where they are now. If you want them, you go to it, bub. I'll see you there. You know, what are you talking to? You cut me loose like this? That's the only way? Jesus. Go there by myself. Well, Monday night, I was there about 15, 20 minutes before him, waiting for him to show up. And I did that. And I went to meetings. And I got friends that tell me I can't count my first 6 or 7 months of sobriety as being sober because I wasn't really here. You know, I've read for pleasure my whole life, the point to where I know the meaning of words I can't pronounce because I've never heard them spoken. But people had expressed incredulity that I could read because I didn't look like I could. I couldn't get my eyes open much further than that. I weighed damn near 300 pounds. I had a complexion like a pomegranate. My eyes looked like two pee holes in a snowbank, but I was cool. And somewhere in that 30 days, I was outside in the club getting a soda, and I was waiting for the meeting to start, and I pulled my pocket watch out, and I took a look at it, because I didn't want to be late to this thing. No disrespect, man, but it wasn't you, it was Big Book Mac. This old bald-headed fart sitting over there in the corner takes a look at me and says, you still got a watch, kid? Maybe you're not ready yet. Then who the hell are you talking to, you old bastard? What do you mean I ain't ready yet? I stayed sober on the resentment for this old fart for 90 days. You mean I can't do that? Watch this. And I hung around. They read the same stuff they read at all the meetings. They read the promises. They did this and they did that. None of that stuff made any sense whatsoever. The reason I was there, and some of you might relate to this, is because the events of my life and the things that I did caused me to be willing to take actions that I was pretty damn certain weren't going to work. But I tried everything else I could think of, and this is the last choice. If I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had two choices. I was going to come here, or I was going to stick my pistol in my mouth and pull the trigger twice. They both look equally viable. Fortunately, I'm somewhat chicken shit, so killing myself was out, so it was Alcoholics Anonymous. But I got here, and I listened to you guys talking about this and the other things. Oh, man, it didn't make sense at all. But I stayed on the what-ifs. Because night after night, you guys are telling me life is just rosy as can be, and things are going to be marvelous. God, this is going to be just wonderful as hell. And I said on the what if, just what if? What if half you people ain't lying to me? If just half you people are telling me the truth, I got a 50-50 chance of this mother actually working. So I hung on that promise, you know, maybe it's going to work for me. I wasn't all that sure, because man, we all get here with that terminal sense of uniqueness. Nobody's got the troubles I got, nobody's got the worries I got, nobody's seen the trouble I've seen, you know. I was pretty sure it would work for you, and even with my inflated ego, I was pretty certain this guy couldn't have got all these people together night after night after night just to lie to me. And I believed that it worked for you, but I wasn't so sure it was going to work for me. But when I got that little glimmer of hope that maybe it's going to work, I hung around a while longer to see what the hell had happened. One night in the meeting, I was about 6 or 7 months sober, and I heard a guy sharing about one of them Jack the Giant killer-sized hangovers. Jeez, what it was. Scattered out a drink. And about a month or so later, I started feeling decent physically. And I realized that I hadn't felt good in 10 years. And in order to have a hangover, you got to feel good every now and again so you can tell the difference. Well, I'd never felt good, so I thought that's what everybody felt. But I realized this guy was complaining about was the way I felt every day of my life. I was either drunk or hungover. Those were the two options, you know. But I hung around and I hung around, and stuff started working a little bit. Little bit by little bit, things started happening. As I drive out to Covina, California, I live in Temple City, and they're about 5 miles apart, which is a long damn way in L.A., let me tell you, because there's a lot of stuff in between the two. I drive out that freeway, and I'd go to that meeting. Man, I'd be wound up tight. Just hardly keep that old truck between the white lines. And I'd get out to that meeting, and I'd sit in there, I'd get that big sigh of relief, and I'd sit down with the rest of you fools. Safe. I'd have the meeting. I get calmed down. I drive home. Just calm and cool. Marvelous. Every night the same thing. I go to work, get wound up. I go home, my wife, and tell the kids everything's going to be fine. Daddy's going to go to a meeting. Stay the hell out of his way. They feed me, point my ass out the door, and I go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I come back to this. Calm and relaxed. Cool. Well, after a while, I started getting home, and by the time I was getting home, and that calm and relaxed and cool feeling wasn't there anymore. And then it's starting to go away about halfway home. It started to go away by the time I get out of the meeting, get out in the truck. So I asked my sponsor about this phenomenon. This old boy I had for a sponsor that was my first sponsor, he used to get this kind of Father Sarah look on his face before he'd lay a little bit of info on you. Beatific, as it were, and he'd lay these pearls of wisdom on you, and I said, yeah, I'm going to meetings, I'm feeling good at the meeting. By the time I get home, I'm wound up tight again, everything's just terrible, blah, blah, blah. Then his best loving sponsor voice, he looks me in the eye and he says, might be time to start working the steps. Oh, okay. So I get that a whirl. That took the heat off for a while. But during the course of the sobriety business, you go through all these changes. You know, when you're first sober, first about 90 days or so, you get a awakening or whatever, where you feel clarity is kind of cool. But in about 5 years, another big one comes, and it goes in these stages. And in between these things, you have a tendency to try it just your own way, you know. I had the what if something bad one night. It's an old boy down south named Tim Towner, who I thought had been sober forever. Big, tall, good-looking, yuppie, blonde kid, weighs about as much as my belly. We were sitting out front talking one night, and I was telling him my troubles, and he was telling me this and that thing, and I was going, yeah, but, yeah, but, yeah, but, and he told me I sounded like an outboard motor. And you got to bear in mind, this is still back in my good-looking days when I weighed about 300 pounds, and there weren't a whole hell of a lot of people who were willing to talk to me in anything but the most civil of manners or behind my back, because it was pretty well known that I wasn't exactly housebroken, and you weren't entirely certain how I'd act, you know. Well, all the love, you know, the love the people in Alcoholics Anonymous dream up for you. This guy looked me right in the eye and said, you ever try and get sober before? Yeah. So how'd it work? Not with a damn. So what are you here for tonight? Get sober. He says, well, why don't you just come in, sit down, shut up, and listen. Ooh. And it amazed me more that this guy had balls enough to talk to me like that, as opposed to what he said to me. But I did that, and I came in to listen to the things you people told me. And bit by bit, in my life, them Eskimos had popped up when I've needed them. And I was talking to a young friend tonight that I just met that, you know, when things start going sideways in my life, I start doing the things those people taught me to do that first 2 or 3 months. And that works, works, and works, and works. Because when I got sober, it was cool. There was about a dozen of us showed up at the same time. And then people down there at the 502 Club thought they'd hit the jackpot. And newcomer galore, you know. They lined us all up like dominoes and gave us orders. They lined us up one day and they said, go to 30 meetings in 30 days. Got to the next guy and told him, you go to 30 meetings in 30 days. Got the guy right next to me who looked just horrible and he says, you go to 30 meetings in 30 days. He got to me, he says, you go to 90 meetings in 90 days. Then they run us off and we do something. Then we came back, they'd line us up all again. One night, the God thing showed up. They lined us all up, told the guy, you got to find a power greater than yourself. Told the next guy, you got to find a power greater than yourself. They got to me and said, you got to find a power other than yourself. I had no idea what they were talking about, because at that point in my life, I was feeling anything less than God-like. But I was acting like God. I didn't realize that. My sponsor finally got tired of my stuff. I think I was trying to whip. This kind of all came together. I was trying to whip my wife and kids into shape one time, and they weren't in the mood to whip into shape, and it was just frustrating the hell out of me. So I was telling this sponsor dude of mine about that thing, and he got that Father Sarah look on his face again, and he says, Lee, the things you're doing don't make you feel good about you. Why don't you quit doing the things you're doing? Oh, I was 36 years old at the time. That thought never crossed my mind. Well, I'll be damned. Isn't that cool? I continued to do it for a while, and he was just sick of me. So he said, I want you to do me a favor. It's going to cure you. Fine. Well, I was a little dumb, defiant, too. Fine, what do you want me to do? And this guy knew the layout of my house because he drank there quite a bit prior to us getting sober. And he knew that in my sentence, if any of you guys are having trouble with God, you can give this a whirl yourself. I guarantee you it'll work. But he knew the layout of my house. He knew in the back of my son's bedroom door we have one of them big full-length mirrors. He says, I want you to go home tonight after everybody's asleep. I said, I want you to take all your clothes off and go in Jeff's room and look at that there mirror. Check it all out. Now just look at the front. Turn around, look over your shoulder, check the back. You know, bend over, take a look at everything. Look at the whole package. And I'm wondering why, you know. And he says, and buddy, when you get done doing all that, you still think you're God, you continue to play. That's you silly ass. About 3 o'clock one morning, when I was damn sure there wasn't a soul in my house wide awake, I went and gave that a whirl. And if you got trouble desperating you between God, give it a whirl. I guarantee you it'll solve your problems. They told me the only thing I needed to know about God is yes, there was one. No, I wasn't him. But that explained it really clearly, let me tell you. Anyway, I plugged along in sobriety, and I did this, and I did that, and I met a few people, and yada, yada. And, you know, prior to getting to Alcoholics Anonymous, I got two boys that are they're the light of my life or the bane of my existence, depending upon how they're acting and how I'm feeling. Well, both these kids hated my guts, and they were deathly afraid of me. And they had every reason to be, because I ain't a real pleasant individual, drunk or hungover especially. 10 years ago, my oldest son named my oldest grandson after me. This is a kid that, you know, 12 years prior to that hated me. You can't get to there from where I came from, you know. My younger son and I today are good friends. We talk to one another. The crazy old woman I'm married to and I were friends. We get along one of them. We have a good time together, you know. And these are all things I didn't have. Friends, you know, that's another thing about Alcoholics Anonymous. You'd be new tonight and this rare phenomenon hasn't popped up in your life. Probably shouldn't warn you about it because it came as a big surprise to me. I always thought I was kind of this just caring, loving type individual, you know. First night I ever sat in a meeting and the guy who sat across the table in his usual spot wasn't there that day. I wondered, man, I hope he's okay. I wonder if he's all right. Maybe he went to a different meeting. Maybe he's got the flu. Maybe he got run over by a bus, you know, whatever it is. And at that point, I realized that that was the first time in my life I'd ever given a damn about another human being. You know, I may not be much, but I'm the only thing I ever think about, you know. All of a sudden, I realized I'm thinking of somebody else. Well, that was a spooky situation. My God, you know. And the fringe benefits, you know, they talk about the fringe benefits of the extra paychecks you get in this program. If all this was about was me not having a drink for 22 years, I wouldn't have lasted 22 weeks, you know. But the extra stuff that goes with it, the getting along with the family, the making the friends, the fitting into life, you know. So I spent the first 35 years of my life feeling like I'd been shot at and missed and shit on and hit. You know, the whole world was picking on me. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I met a bunch of people who loved me enough to tell me the truth about what the problem was. It's you. Me? Yeah, you, Chubby. Well, see, I don't want to hear that crap. I don't care if you want to hear it or not. It's you. And they said it in a loving enough manner that I was able to work on that and realize the problem was me. You know? I had my wife threw a surprise birthday party for me for my 7th birthday, and I had a house full of people who came to help me celebrate my 7th AA birthday. Prior to coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, you could hold a party for me and invite every one of my friends and hold the thing in a phone booth, and there would have been plenty of room, you know. A friend of mine drove me up here to come talk to you folks. What a cool deal. To have someone that you care to spend time with, that cares enough about you, drive you clear to Fresno, California. Plus, it's kind of cool to have a chauffeur who's been sober 21 years. I was pretty certain he wouldn't show up drunk and get me killed, you know. Just all the stuff, you know, the all the extra stuff in life, the getting along with the kids, the this, the that, that's what this thing's all about, because I'd have been long gone if all it was not drinking, because I like to drink. I doubt there's anybody in this place don't like to drink, you know. I like the little rush you get when you first start. I like kind of getting mellow out. I like being so screwed up that to get out them curtains, I'd have to knock about half of you over on my way out of here. What I don't like is the way I live when I drink the way I drink. And if I could ever find a way to separate the two, by golly, that's what I would have done. But I couldn't, you know. I can do the things that you people teach me to do and live the life I'm living today, or I can do things my way and live the way I used to live. And boy, it's pretty much a no-brainer. But it's just that's the way it works. This is a whole program of dichotomies. Anybody ever read the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and about halfway through it you realize this doesn't make sense? There's absolutely nothing in this mother that has anything to do with staying sober. What the hell are they talking about? The only way that I can stay sober is through this program. But if you put a lot of brain power into that thing, it's not real sensible. Then they talk about these sayings we got. Surrender to win. How do you like that one? I don't recall John Wayne or Henry Ford surrendering when they won World War II. But I come in here, they tell me surrender to win. And they tell me you can't keep it unless you give it away. That makes a lot of sense, don't it? You know, it don't work that way with baseball cards, you know, girlfriends or anything else, but it works that way with sobriety. What a strange deal. The scary part or the embarrassing part is you know, I know a lot of stuff. I may not be a real tidy package, but I know a lot of stuff, let me tell you. I guarantee you that if you come to me with your problems and I give you my advice, you can do the best life you can imagine. I don't know why, I just got that magic touch. I can't run my own life to save my damn soul, so I come in here and I find a bunch of stumble bums can't run their own life. I let them tell me how to run mine. Mine works bitching. Now, how embarrassing is that, you know? But that's the way this thing works. It might have something to do with the self-worth, you know, feelings to this day. You know, I feel a lot better about Lee Erickson than I did 22 years ago, but maybe I'm not quite where I ought to be yet. If you come to me for some advice, I'll dig down into my barrel of readily available advice, turn my armpit, I'll pick the choicest little piece out, and I say, here, give this thing a whirl, bub. For myself, I'm willing to scoop any scum that flows to the surface off and give that a whirl, and it doesn't work so well. You know? So I don't know, but I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I surround myself with a bunch of people that love me enough to tell me the truth about me, and some of the things you people have told me over the years have not been too cool and kind of embarrassing, but I've been sober for a long time. By being beaten to the point where I was willing to take advice that I was pretty sure wouldn't work and just be surrendered to the point where, fine, I'll give it a whirl, you know. So it's, you know, it's what you want out of life. What do you want out of life? What do you want out of Alcoholics Anonymous? What the hell are you doing on Friday night sitting in this dingy place listening to some fat gray-haired guy swear at you? There's got to be more to life than just this, you know. What I got out of Alcoholics Anonymous so far has been life, you know. When I was drinking and using, the things that I get my enjoyment out of life went by me. The little fun and for free things, you know. Joke you share with your children, conversation you might have with a buddy when you're driving up Highway 99, getting along with the old lady, those are fleeting. They come and go, and if you're sober, you're there to enjoy them. If you're drunk, you miss them. The shit, on the other hand, in life, and life has its share of that, is tenacious. You know, I'd be sitting there minding my own business, I see some poop coming over the horizon, decide I ain't gonna deal with that, so I go get drunk at it. Not only did it wait for me while I was busy being drunk, somehow I managed to make it worse every time, and then I had a bigger one waiting for me when I came out of the fog. What you people have given me is that when life's good, by God, old Lee's there to enjoy that. And when life sucks, unfortunately, Lee's there to enjoy that too. But the freedom you've given me is when life is good, I don't have to make it bad. And when it's god-awful, I don't need to make it any worse. And that ain't the freedom I had before. Because I can take a perfectly good situation and enough alcohol and screw it up. Or take a god-awful situation and just make it worse. I don't need to do that today. So pretty much is, you know, what do you want out of life? What do you want for you? How do you want to feel about you? If you're new tonight, you find yourself a sponsor, preferably of the same sex, that has what you want. That ain't necessarily a good-looking old lady in a flashy car in the parking lot. That's somebody who's the feels inside and how you want to feel about yourself and wants to live the way you want to live. And, you know, if you're tired of hating, blaming, and wondering why the world's picking on little old you, you might want to give this thing a whirl, you know. It certainly works well for me, and I'm a, you know, 57-year-old great big kid. If my life wasn't better today doing things the way you people taught me than it was doing things my way, I'd go back out to doing what I was doing in a hot minute, believe me. But you people have afforded me a better life that I can't find on my own. At the beginning of this thing, what I neglected to tell you guys was that you're in for a treat tonight, because my sponsor said I'm the perfect AA speaker. So I'm too stupid to say anything controversial within, you know, the boundaries of my language. And I'm too lazy to talk for very long. So if you got something going on at 8:30 tonight, don't worry about it, because you'll be out of here. But I want to thank you all for coming here tonight to do a 12-step call on me, because every one of you is very important to me. Because I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and found myself in there by myself, I'd have been with the same bad company I'd always been with. So if you're new tonight, give this thing a whirl. If you've been around for a while, you know what I'm talking about. And God bless you, and thank you for helping me.